Yep, the major's in the house, Major Ed Dames, Dr. Doom, as we talk about remote viewing. More to talk about, and we'll take your calls next on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast to Coast. Amelia Earhart disappeared in 1937. She was the first female aviator to fly solo across the Atlantic Ocean. And all of a sudden, of course, where did she go? She was 39 years old. Ed Dames, have you ever remote viewed that situation?
Yes. Yes, I have. In fact, the reason I'm tackling the Whitebird, the Le Sol Blanc aircraft first, is because that not only solves a mystery, but it actually changes a page in history. So it's a more impactful one, and resource-wise, it's much easier because the aircraft is on the East Coast of our country, and fairly accessible. I don't think the remains of the pilot and the co-pilot are locatable, but that the aircraft itself is. But the Earhart thing, I was offered a couple times by very big companies chances to go out and look for her. But there, unless you have a boat, a ship for your logistics support, it's very difficult to fly into where I. You know, it's easy to find these things these days, George. Her skull or her aircraft engine can be actually located in 2 days' time on the ground, and then we go in. And if I have a chance to do that, we'll do it, but it'll have to wait until next year. However, that's problematic.
Do you think she crashed and died as opposed to being, taken by the Japanese?
No, she wasn't taken by the Japanese. She was running out of the fuel. She tried to land close to one of the atolls, but the landing gear hit a reef, and the plane toppled. The navigator was killed, but she made it to shore. She made it to shore, and then died on the atoll.
On the island. I will always remember the remote viewing you did when millionaire aviator Stephen Fawcett died and disappeared, and you came on this program before anybody ever did and said they'll find him in the Sierra Nevadas. And I think, if I remember, Ed, you even tried to get that information to his crew, didn't you?
Oh, no, I was working directly with the team leader. That was the largest search in U.S., most expensive search in U.S. history, even the Air Force.
Wasn't there a group, though, that you were doing remote viewing, not for, but they didn't take your information, and they should have?
No, this was the team, that search team itself.
I mean, were they listening to you?
Oh, yeah, they were listening, but I kept saying, no, Ed, it couldn't be, they didn't have enough fuel, only 65 horsepower engine. I'm telling you, he got caught in an updraft, and then down he went. He lost control of the aircraft, and because it was only 65 horsepower engine, I think. And I said, this is where he's at. Now, these days and times, we have really evolved the remote viewing geofix tool, extremely evolved. So we can get down to as close as 60 feet to a target in many instances, except in open water.
That's amazing.
Oh, yeah. You know, there's nothing like it. And you'll see the results of that in the news in the remainder of the year, summer particularly.
Has technology helped you with remote viewing?
Yes. It hasn't helped with the remote viewing, but it's helped with the geofix, the location skills. We could not do this in the military. You know, it had to evolve over the last 30 years. I say that because it's so much work, but it's done now. Yeah, two things helped me out immensely. One is a GPS device, and the other is a Google Earth or a Microsoft, the Bing.
Mm-hmm.
Those tools, adjuncts to my work, are extremely valuable to me.
The 10-year-old case of Natalie Holloway, she was 18 years old when she disappeared, is popping up back in the news again, where a witness claims that he saw Van der Sloot slamming her around and carrying her body, and that he killed her and buried her somewhere out there. What's new there? Anything?
No, we didn't pick up the case again. As I said, I had a man underwater there, an agent.
Right.
We had to go underwater, and we believed that she was put in a lobster cage.
That's right.
Sunk, and she's not there anymore.
Ironically, they nailed him for murder later in Peru. that guy.
Yeah, I'm aware of that.
Okay, let's take some calls. We're with Major Ed Dames. Let us go to Stephen in New York City. Welcome to the show. Stephen, thanks for calling.
Well, thank you, George and Major. I'm really psyched to be on Coast to Coast. I enjoy your program often.
Thank you.
Here's the thing. There can be no one in the universe that wants to see a UFO, that wants to see a ghost, that wants to see a Sasquatch, that wants to see things remotely, as you do, sir, or claim to. Now, what's the evidence? What's the proof? Give me something to hold on to. Give me a...
You mean like a dead body?
Give me an interview with a newscaster and put it on World TV. I mean, you know...
Yep, you know what?
Where's the proof to any of it?
Well, I guess you could use the Stephen Fawcett case as an example. There's the body. There's the crashed plane.
There's where I said it was, Sierra Nevada's.
And there it is.
But actually, there is. You brought up. I was talking about esoteric and metaphysical stuff predominantly, instead of dead children and their murders.
I don't think you have tried to remote Bigfoot, have you?
Oh, that we have. I have a personal pet project there, Sasquatch. You know, what we're doing is I use remote viewing to locate a hot zone in the Pacific Coastal Mountains. I don't want to mention where yet. A specific ridge line. Where it's a hot spot. People don't know about this. And nearby, about 2 miles away, there was a Sasquatch sighting a couple of years ago. But this ridge is a hot zone for these guys. So what I'm doing, I'm putting a remote trail camera there, a wireless one.
That's a good idea.
Yeah. I'm going to monitor that for movement. If I catch one of these on the trail cam, then we're going in with a 50 cal. No, we're going to go in.
No, don't do that.
No, I'm just kidding. Because these things are not animals. These are not animals. We're going in with a thermal imaging device.
Mm-hmm.
We're going in with cameras.
But Stephen's correct. You know, when you talk about that, where's the evidence? Where's the proof? Well, it's in those things that you're working on. If you get it in thermal imaging, that's part of the proof.
Well, we're not sure the thing is hot. It could, if it's an avatar and it's made up of just molecules and atoms that
right.
pull them from the air, that's valuable scientific information as well, because it doesn't have a thermal signature, but it has an IR. It's picked up, illuminated by IR. But I will tell your listener, watch the news this next couple of weeks, because we really I don't talk about missing children on the show. I'm not going to mention any names, but I've got two. The next upcoming week to look at two cases, and we've got one of the FBI's most wanted cases. We're working with the Bureau on that. And like I say, this is because of the precision of geofix now, the location tools that we did not have in the military, and now we can shine often.
It was one of the late Sylvia Brown's downfalls, Ed, is when she would tell parents their children were dead and they were found alive years later. Mm-hmm.
Don't want to make a mistake like that.
You can't make a mistake like that.
No, that, ethically, that's not. In fact, I do not work with parents, families, on these cases. I go in myself sometimes with a crew member, and then we go right to law enforcement. I learned long ago not to work with families, because families will beg me to find a child, and if the child is, it's only 4 hours generally between an abduction, a rape, and the kid being thrown away, the body being thrown away. John Walsh knew this as well. And the last thing a family wants to hear, a family member, is body. They want to believe to the dying day that kid's going to come back through that door again.
That's too. Right.
And if you don't solve the case, that what follows grief is anger, and they take the anger out on you. So, you know, live and learn. We let the cops do this.
Ever remote view Fort Knox? Is there any gold there at all?
I get asked this question quite a bit. No, I haven't. I have not done that.
I bet it's empty.
Well, there may be a lot of tungsten.
There might be. Let's go to Osaka, Japan. Kavako is with us. First-time caller. Hello there.
Hello. Hello, George.
Good to have you
How
with
are
us.
You?
I'm fine. Thank you.
Good. I love your show. Thank you.
Sure.
And hi, Ed. I've been to your I've been to your workshops and talk event. I hope you remember me.
Paula.
And I'd like to know what will happen to Japan. Should we expect some kind of EMP attack or nuclear bomb?
No.
What will happen?
No. Northern Japan is cooked, figuratively speaking, as I mentioned to you once. Northern Japan really doesn't have much of a future because of Fukushima. Southern Japan is okay for a while because the plumes, the airborne plumes ahead to the north, to the northeast, and the marine plumes, you know, generally are swept away directly to the east. Right now, in the next couple of years, that will change. But Tokyo itself, the Japanese government has quietly negotiated with Myanmar, China, island of Hainan, to move a lot of the population in Tokyo because Tokyo's finished. The water supply is already 15 times over allowable radiation.
Let me ask Kafako something. Kafako, do they tell you how bad it is in Japan?
Never. And the secrecy law is forbidding us to talk to each other like that.
No, they're not even allowed to talk about it.
That's amazing.
On the internet. So I try not to talk about it on my website. So do you think Ed, Osaka is going to be the next capital of Japan?
I don't know where the next capital will be, but I do know that Tokyo is in grave danger, and your government knows that too. But there's nothing they can do about it. That's the problem. It's whether it's a Minuteman missile silo that's just been shut down by an intrusion with a UFO or whatever. Government can't do anything about these things.
Such a
disaster.
Government
can't do anything. It doesn't talk.
Such a disaster.
Or it lies.
And what happens if there's another tragedy, an earthquake at Fukushima?
Then you'll have to evacuate all of northern Japan, and that would be...
You're talking about millions and millions of people.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
Thanks for the phone call, Kafako. Keep listening. I believe Tom said she's a Coast Insider as well. We'll go to Culver City now. Jeff's with us on Coast to Coast. Hey, Jeff.
Yeah, hello, George and Mr. Ed Dames. Mr. Dames, remote viewing is the, you know, ultimate form of spying, and I always believed that there was more to this program. But what I'd like to know is this. Is it possible to actually project oneself at will in the designated location and then interact and converse with whomever might be there? Because if it is possible to do this, the data and information gathered during one of these excursions would be invaluable. So my question is it possible to actually become a part of what's being remotely viewed by deliberately projecting oneself onto the scene and becoming interactive with whoever's there?
We tried to induce out-of-body experiences in the unit as an experiment for a while. We tried to do that, too, because that would be what you're saying, close to what you're saying. It's a whole lot better to actually, you know, go mano a mano with your subject, even though you're out-of-body. But it didn't work. We had some experiences, but, you know, they were so awing to the poor lieutenant who had the out-of-body, he forgot about the mission. So that didn't work. That's certainly not what remote viewing is. No, we're not going anywhere. It's a holographic universe, think of it that way, or the mind of God, just one mind. And we're plugged into that in terms of consciousness and consciousness tools. So if I remote view you, Jeff, then I'm not remote. There's no energetic contact whatsoever. It's not telepathy or psychokinesis. I'm remote viewing the way you exist as a pattern of information in the universe. Some other dimension. So there's no contact with you. It's just my attention is turned toward you, but that takes me into your pattern, and then I start downloading information from it, the matrix, we call it.
Ed, scientists are baffled about the little dwarf asteroid called Ceres that is showing some lights, and they're trying to figure out exactly what it is, and that's something you should remote view, I would think.
I did.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, I was curious.
What'd you see?
I took a look at it's not lights. It's outgassing. There's some gases of some, I didn't spend a lot of time with, but there's some gases or vapor coming up from the ground in those locations, and so they're just reflecting the sunlight.
Simple as that. Ed, thanks. Let's take another call before the break, and then we'll come back with final calls. We've got John in Sebring, Florida, east of the Rockies. Hey, John, go ahead. You're on with Ed Dames.
I'm certainly honored to be on with the Major Dames, and I want to ask two questions. The CAP during World War II, Civilian Air Patrol, was civilians helping look for invading air, and I'm not the ISIS. I believe what he said a while ago about ISIS. Absolutely certain, and I want to know what we civilians can do to get organized to help detect them, I suppose, as part of detect them, and also to defend ourselves from what they might want to do. And my second question is concerning power plants, and nuclear power plants, I guess, are a threatening problem to us all. Could we change all of those to, say, using natural gas and just go ahead and shut down the nuclear plants? And, sir, General, Major Dames, I'm wanting to learn more about your work. I've heard about you tonight for the first time. Thank you for being on, and I look forward to hearing your answers.
Okay, and we're going to be giving you Ed's website in a moment where you can track some of the places he goes and speaks. Go ahead, Ed.
Well, the power plant thing, my son is a very brilliant physicist, and he is working on converting natural gas into oil. The maturation of that technology is down the road quite a bit. In terms of the Civil Air Patrol and ISIS, no, the devices and the detectors that are used to, for instance, screen Long Beach Harbor for nuclear bombs or things like that are very, very sophisticated and extremely expensive and classified systems as well. So Civil Air Patrol is not going to get involved in that.
The Major's website, learnrv.com, is linked up at coasttocoastam.com. He's got a workshop coming up on August 22nd in Las Vegas. Ed, give me a quick overview of what people can expect when they go to a workshop like that.
Well, this is a new one where I said I'm a data dump of both ET and other government knowledge. And if you go to exposingtheagenda.com, that's linked up on your website too. There's a short overview there.
Okay.
What can they expect? They can expect that it's all day and most of the night. They can expect to be.
You work them, don't you?
It's not a happy presentation.
What do you mean it's not a happy presentation?
It's exciting in terms of the ET and the alien stuff. It's very, very exciting. I have to agree.
Is
and that was why I got out.
Is it scary? Is it just a lot of work?
No, it's not a lot of work. It's the message, the actual details of the message. For instance, you know, if you look at continuity of government, where you've got government officials and military officials and NORAD going under the ground, not everybody can fit in there. So, you know.
Well, we can't, that's for sure.
You know, right, and what happens to the we, those
yeah.
kinds of things. So there's a lot of other agendas there that need to be exposed, and people do need to know about them. And I'm going to lay it on the line. But I think that the extraterrestrial stuff is fascinating to me.
Oh,
I was the youngest member of two working groups. One was an Enigma working group in DOD and National Intelligence, and the other was a Codename working group that studied UFOs. And I was the youngest member on both, and that was very neat. That was very exciting duty.
All right, more to come with the Major, Ed Dames, and your final calls on Coast to Coast AM. If you want to watch the amazing interview I did with Major Ed Dames on our television show Beyond Belief, simply go to this website, take advantage of the promotional offer, beyondbelief.com. That's www.beyondbelief.com. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you with Major Ed Dames and, of course, your final phone calls. They keep lining up here for you, Ed. Ed, the seminar that you're putting on the 22nd, is it like an all-day affair? How long does it last?
It's about from 9 in the morning until about 10 or 12 at night.
It's pretty intense.
Yeah, it is. Like I say, it's 30 years of what we know, and I haven't laid out on the public yet. In fact, some of the information I don't think a lot of members of the public are ready for.
By the time someone leaves the event, what have they learned?
They've learned inside information that the government, even elements of the government, does not know about the extraterrestrial agenda. And they've learned all the details that they probably wish they would not have known about our own government agenda and a few other governments' agenda.
All right, let's go to Francis in Palm Springs, California, to get this segment going. Hi, Francis. Go ahead.
Hi, George. Oh, my God. I finally got through to you. I've been trying to get through to you for so long, for since that 370 flight, Malaysia flight,
yes,
went down.
Yes.
I even wrote you an email about it. I don't know if you would call this remote viewing. You put a label on it.
Mm-hmm.
But I get premonitions of tragedies that are going to happen. And also, when I hear it comes over the a radio or the TV, I get a visual of it. For example, when that Malaysia airline, when they were talking about that on TV,
mm-hmm,
I got a vision of it. The pilot actually slowly, slowly, slowly drove over the water for a long time, and then actually drove that plane right into the ocean. And I called two TV stations because I promised myself that from now on, whenever I get a premonition or a vision like that about any tragedy, I was going to try to do something about it. And I called two TV stations and I told them about it, you know, that it went down in the ocean. And what? And they said they would look into it, but then they just didn't bother. And they kept looking for it on land.
They probably did nothing. What you need to do, Francis, is start documenting all these things that happened to you, so that, you know, you can at least, and send me emails each time in advance.
I'll tell you something else real important.
All right.
I'm going to see you in Joshua Tree, by the way. But two things, actually. 1947, I was 7 years old, okay, and I remember that very well when that
Roswell.
Roswell happened. Yes, that happened. Trust me, that happened, okay? And everybody was terrified and petrified. Everybody was talking about it. People were starting to talk about killing themselves and everything, okay? And then a couple of weeks later, they came out with that BS about some weather balloon, okay?
That's right. That's
so
exactly
that's one thing. And then the other thing I wanted to tell you about was, and I'm sorry till today I didn't do something about it, was when this plane full of people went over, I think it was the Andes Mountains. I'm not sure about the mountains now. But it crashed, and I get the whole vision in my head as they're talking about it. For example, this man, Ed, your guest,
yeah,
if he talks about that little girl or the child that was abducted, if he talks about it, I might get a visual about what happened to it or where it is.
I'm not sure you're remote viewing, but you're probably clairvoyant. And the plane crash, are you talking about the one where the pilot locked the pilot out?
Yeah, yes, yes.
That crashed in the French Alps.
Okay, right, okay, that's right. And as I was standing in my doorway with the sunshine and I could see the plane going down, I saw the tail of the plane cracked off at the top of the mountain. And I don't know if you know anything about snow, but when they were down in that valley, and my brain was screaming and screaming because I saw the whole thing. They're alive, they're alive, they're alive. And I was going to run to the phone and call, but I'm afraid to do that because people think you're crazy.
A lot of people would. Let me ask you, Ed, is she remote viewing or is she being clairvoyant?
No, she's a clairvoyant. She's a natural psychic. But the problem is, in order for those skills to be, in order to be turned into professional, we take that natural ability, and I, as a teacher, you know, we train it. It's, remote viewing is a trained skill. But she's psychic, and about 15% of the population are way above average psychically.
She needs to get the word out, though, about the things she's saying before they happen,
right,
so people will listen to her when something does happen.
Yeah, it can't be after the fact.
Okay, thanks, Francis. Appreciate you calling. Let's go to Mobile, Alabama. Rich is with us. Hey, Rich, thank you for calling, sir. You're up with us.
George. Thank you. Long time listener, first time caller.
Thank you.
I had questions about, I heard earlier that Major was involved in the Cali drug cartel,
yeah,
program, and wanted to know, I'm in law enforcement, I'm a shift commander over there, pretty dangerous jurisdiction down here.
It sure
worked
is.
With Jerry Speziale in the past, who's now in New Jersey. Want to know how much assistance you gave Chief Speziale or how much assistance he gave you in that program.
No, we were. Where I worked was a very, very black unit that was right out of Fort Meade, and our job was classified to actually confront the cartel in its own territory to take the drug war down there in the early days. And I was with that program about 6 months. So no, we did not work with any.
I mean, they didn't even know you were out there.
No. Nobody. If we died, nobody would know who.
They would disallow any knowledge of you.
Roger, burn this tape and that kind of thing.
Yep. Okay. Hey.
In fact, we walked a fine line. In fact, we crossed the line too, where even members of Congress were not briefed. The Secretary of Defense knew what we were doing, had to know what we were doing, but members of Congress weren't briefed. Senate Intelligence Committee and House Intelligence Committee, because their staffers leaked like sieves, and the young staffers, college grads, they just leaked, and our lives were on the line. Many people's lives were on the line. That's why we were acting above the law.
Ed, were you born with this ability, or did you learn it yourself?
All negative. I was, the last 30 years, I've worked hard to get to where I am. I'm about average in terms, or below, a little bit below average in terms of innate ability, my birthright, psychic birthright, my antenna, about below average. I had to work very hard to be good. But the people I train who are natural psychics, if they toe the line and they're good students, I can turn them into not just pros, but superstars.
I was going to say, are there any students of yours that you would say might be the best I've ever seen?
There are probably about five in the last 30 years that I could say that.
So they don't come around all the time.
I'm sorry?
They don't come around all the time, these great remote viewers. I mean, 5 in 30 years, that's not a lot.
Well, it has to be. There's many, many people that could fit that bill, but they're not interested in remote viewing. And the ones that are interested and have that natural ability, that's the, those make great, I hire them.
Let's go to Limestone, West Virginia. Hello, Buck. You're up.
Hey, George, thanks for taking my call.
Yes, sir, Buck. Good to hear from you again.
Hey, thank you. I'd like to ask the Major, if I could, do remote viewers have a moral or ethical code that they follow?
It's a good question.
Would be like standardized?
It's a very good question. I do not teach ethics. I leave that up to my... I have my own ethics, for instance.
I was going to say, at least you have ethics.
Yeah, I have my own ethics, but I don't impose them upon my students. For instance, I don't think just because you have the ability to do something, a deep mind probe, for instance, like we did with Saddam Hussein as a contract, just because you have the ability to do something doesn't really give you the right to do it. And people's lives are very private. But I do make exceptions for terrorists and for fugitive criminals, very bad criminals. I will go into their heads. I'll go into their dreams. After I find out where they're sleeping.
Were remote viewers involved in the search for Osama bin Laden?
No.
Why not?
Well, we were. We pointed out where Osama bin Laden was. I passed that right to my contacts in DOD, but they didn't use the information.
Why not?
Well, because there would have been no excuse to go in and do a lot of stuff in Afghanistan, for instance.
Hmm.
In other words, the military-industrial complex was very happy that we were, but that that they had a war up their sleeve in Afghanistan. We knew where Osama bin Laden was. I passed that on, but they needed an excuse to for the complex to make war.
So the longer he was out there,
correct,
the more they could do.
Correct.
Do you think he died earlier than later?
I'm not sure. We think that perhaps he did. I didn't check after I realized that it was a lost cause in terms of my resources and people working. Then I stopped looking at him.
And Planet X, have you remote viewed the possibility that it's out there?
Yes, there does appear to be something that is not a comet, something that is not an asteroid, something that's not, well, it could be a small planet, but we don't know what it is, but it is out there and periodically does pass this way through our solar system.
And when it does, havoc, they say.
Yeah, we haven't looked at that, but it that's what they say, yeah.
Next up, let's go to Gary, Santa Maria, California. Gary. Hi.
Thank you, George. Ed, back in 2006, you were on with Art Bell, and you had mentioned it towards the end of your hour that the Monroe Institute did the vetting and the training of the Stargate program with all of the remote viewers, including you and Paul Smith. I was wondering, since the Monroe Institute at that time was so heavily vested in astrology, and also, George, Shafria and what Ingo Swann said about her. If you just Google breakthrough to creativity and then the name Ingo Swann after that, it'll take you right through the chapter that he talks about Shafria. If anybody thinks that the radio jumped into her bathtub all by itself, you're an idiot.
And we're talking about my aunt who passed on.
Yes, sir. And if you read what Ingo wrote about her, I think he was in love with her.
I do too.
But as far as the Monroe Institute goes, in those chapters, and you can get all of them, she asked that it not be mentioned until after she passed, and then Ingo made a request that none of that would be published until after he passed. So since his passing, it's now just all out on the web. But he said in that chapter that that Bob Monroe used to get his jollies, he was kind of a party animal, pinching ladies' bottoms while he was out of body, and that is remote. That's what Ingo said. And remote influencing, I think, remote influencing, not remote viewing, has a lot to do with astrology tapping into the holographic universe, leveraging what your intent is with the particular chart you have and the chart of that time. Just like an intent of a probe going around Jupiter to slingshot to Pluto, your intentions gain thousands of times more power when it's aligned astrologically. And I think that teams of eight of astrologically aligned remote viewers can do massive remote influencing, like creating apathy in voters and people that just don't care. George, please do a show on the Trans-Pacific Partnership. It is
The TPP.
Such a serious issue.
Yep,
I look forward to hearing both you and Ed Dames. I am categorically certain that astrology works because I had 25 million records from American Express, 4.5 million records from L.A. County voter registrations. I ran over 1 million birth charts.
All right, it does. It does. Hold on for a second. Eddie, there's a lot on the plate there.
Ingo, I became Ingo's protege, and then Ingo, when he realized his contract was over teaching coordinate remote viewing to the government, he went back to his first love, which was astrology.
You don't dabble in that, though, do you?
No, I think it's interesting, but I don't.
You're the straight remote viewer.
Yeah, the figure, you know, Sir Ben Kingsley plays me in the movie Suspect Zero.
That's right.
It was FBI.
And you were in that movie, actually,
yeah,
weren't you?
I was FBI instructor. But Kevin Spacey plays that role was modeled after me in Men of Sarah Coach. And I'm interviewed on the back end of the DVD if you have the movie. But he plays this anal retentive, super straight guy, and that was me.
It's amazing. Amazing. I had to go back and rent that movie just to see you, and it was kind of cool.
Yeah, it was a wonderful training, Sir Ben, a wonderful man, great to be around him. I did that, and I edited that in Tom Cruise's office while he was off making The Last Samurai.
Are you doing any more consulting to the movie industry?
No, I haven't. I don't have time. I want to finish up a number of projects before I do anything else, and then spend some time with my family. So I'm going into semi-retirement.
You never will retire.
Yeah.
Major. You know that. Santa Clara, California. It's Kenny's turn, first time caller. Hey, Kenny.
How you doing?
Good.
Long-time listener. I've been listening since about 1995, first time caller.
Good. Thank you.
And I remember around 1998, when Major Ed Daines was on the show, Art asked him about the 2000 election. And Art Bell asked him, who's going to win? And Major Ed Daines, correct me if I'm wrong, I think he said, nobody wins.
Well,
I was shocked. He said, nobody wins. He said, yeah, nobody wins. Something's going to happen that's going to challenge our institutions as we know it today, as it exists. And I was wondering if Major Ed Daines could elaborate.
I didn't say that. What I did say was it was too far out to make, we can't, as remote viewers, we're looking at an election, and that particular event hasn't gelled yet in time. It's not like a nuclear explosion or something geophysical, which is very easy to look out ahead and pick up. Something like that, though, if the event hasn't really gelled or come together in time, if we're too far away from it, like an election, then we can't get any useful data.
Do you make specific predictions through remote viewing about the candidates?
No. We do for fun. For instance, I teach students shortcuts in remote viewing. Remote viewing is a lot of work. It's heavy-duty work. But I teach them shortcuts. For instance, if we wanted to know if there was a man and a woman, a presidential candidate and the vice presidential candidate were running, and the vice presidential candidate was a female, and then the other, let's say the Democrats were two men, then we could use the vice president's genitalia, for instance, as a target of the winner.
A great target.
Yeah, be very quick to sketch a genitalia within a matter of 20 minutes, you know, and it's a mutually exclusive thing most of the time.
You would think so.
Yeah.
Ed, the clock is ticking. Get your websites out for us. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think exposingtheagenda.com is the important one tonight, and any other information about remote viewing, learning it, or where I teach on the web, and my pros, learnrv.com.
Super. Ed, thanks again. Always good to chat with you.
Yeah, I have a lot of friends attending your conference this weekend.
Yeah, I'm going to be down there. We're going to be heading out there late tomorrow night.
Yeah, they're looking forward to being there.
Super. Tell them to come up and say hi to me. Major Ed Daines. Up next, we're going to reveal a new discovery in Egypt. You're going to hear it here for the very first time. We will be back.